Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I'm really excited to introduce you to today's guest. Mathieu is a landscape architect whose mission it is to bring sustainability to everything we do in our world. I originally asked him to come on and give us tips on what we could do with our own gardens. Most of my peers are being so much more aware now about the environment, its complexities, and the interrelatedness of many parts of our lives. Then I started digging deeper into Mathieu's company, his philosophies, and found his masterclass. And the conversation got more complex. I learned a lot, and I hope you do too. And if you know someone who, on a larger scale, is into sustainability, send them this podcast episode and let's link these people up. As I learn more and more, it becomes so very apparent this is a global issue that needs a global solution. As I used to tell my kids, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Listen now. As we continue to traverse this crazy year we're living in, I am especially appreciative of the insights of my guests, how they maintain their focus or adapt their focus to keep us reminded that we still need to live our lives the best way we can. As you know, I'm in Canada. Just this morning, I was listening to an interview about the roller coaster trade tariffs, in this case, the energy issues, oil and gas, minerals, water. And the reporter asked if all the chaos might mean sustainability efforts might get put on the back burner. The answer? Probably, at least for now. And those were the thoughts front of mind as I prepped for my conversation with today's guest. Mathieu's focus is practical tips and insights on gardening, farming, and sustainable development. He wants to inspire you to make a meaningful impact on the land and the planet. When I first reached out to Mathieu, I was thinking about how so many of us midlife folk would love to have, and are willing to put in the work, to live a more cooperative, sustainable lifestyle. Whether it's realizing the errors of our ways or remembering a gentler time helping our parents or grandparents in large, lovely home gardens. I am so ready for this conversation today. Mathieu Mahaus, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you, Agnes, for having me on the show. I'm super excited to be here and inspire the boomers to keep booming. I love your podcast.
Boom with a bang. Yeah, that's us. I want to start big picture, then bring it into a more neighborhood community level. But first, I'd love the picture you painted of growing up on your family's farm in Belgium. Can you tell us more about that, please?
Yeah, that's a great question to kick off because that's where everything started. So I grew up on a family farm. My brother and my father are still active farmers today. And when I was a child, something really interesting happened. By the time I was around 3 years old, one of my first memories, I got so interested in how on earth is it possible that if you have a little seed and you put it in the soil, it can grow into a plant or a magnificent tree. So I was so fascinated about, like, when I started to realize, like, I was just mind blown by it, because as I grew up on the farm, I go with my father, like, in early spring, we go to the middle of the field to see if everything that he has seeded is starting to sprout. So I still remember clearly my dad with, like, a special small knife scratching the soil to see, like, oh, the crops are sprouting. And that was, like, I could see he was clearly happy about that. And I was so fascinated about that. And then a few years later, by the time I was 5-6 years old, I got an amazing teacher at school where we learned to do our own gardening. So we were having a small backyard garden at the school. Our whole classroom was full of plants. She taught us how to propagate, how to do all this amazing stuff. And I'm super grateful for that. Actually, I finished writing my book just now and I gave her a copy. So that's really interesting. So I'm very grateful for that teacher. And then I came home and I told my parents, you know what, I'm going to start my own vegetable garden. And my parents are, like, they're super busy running a farm. It's a big cash, like a mostly like big crop farm, grains and cattle. We never had vegetables on the farm. It's changing now. So they said, no, we don't have time for that. They're like, starting out their life, busy with a lot of things. They're like, no, we don't have time for that. But I persisted and I said, I really want to do this. Please just like help me out or give me something. All of a sudden, they said, okay, we have this small corner in the back of the garden where nobody goes. You can do whatever you want there. So I started out and I started with arranging the soil. My grandmother also came out, helped me. And we prepared the soil. And I also started to arrange my garden. Like I found old stones laying around on the farm and I placed them in a cross shape. And that was where I got also fascinated about designing stuff, like creating spaces. And then what I did, and this is, if you're still starting out as a gardener, you can get a great success by starting out with radishes. So if you want to, if you've never really done any gardening and you want to start, buy some radish seeds. A few weeks later, you have something to eat, which is amazing. So this 5-6-year-old me started with that for some reason. And I had my early success. Like we were eating our own radishes from my own garden. I was like, how cool is this? I still remember that. We had a salad with my mother. And then I thought, like, wow, this is so easy, this gardening. Like, I love it. It's so simple. So I got my dad to buy a bunch of seeds, tomatoes, lettuce, everything. So I seeded my whole garden. I had prepared the soil. And I thought, like, nice, I'm going to come back in a couple of weeks. And my garden is going to be full of lush, tasty vegetables, but I think you already know what happened next. I came back after a holiday with my cousins, like super excited to see my garden full of things I could eat. But no, my whole garden was overgrown by weeds. Weeds that were taller than myself because we probably had put a little bit too much compost in. And I was devastated by it. Like, why is this? Like, why is nature not helping me to support me in what I want to do? And from that moment on, and you can only connect the dots looking backwards, because it was only later in life when I grew up, I get my degree. I started studying, I did a bachelor and master in landscape architecture because I was pursuing what I loved as a child. And then I did also permaculture courses, and it clicked for me, like, okay, when you're preparing your garden and you keep the soil bare, whatever nature is going to do is try to restore the health of the soil. And what is nature using to restore the health of the soil? Because you're tilling it, you're disturbing it. It's always sending the weeds, and weeds are actually just annual plants that are starting to recover, that help the soil to recover from disturbances. So it was only later that I started to realize that, and I traveled the world. I went to a lot of different places, eco resorts, regenerative farms, organic farms, to really study and understand this more. And from that whole experience, I wrote my award-winning book, 12 Universal Laws of Nature, How to Get the Most Potential Out of Your Land, because I saw that nature is working in a certain way it has been working in a certain way for millions and millions of years. So if you want to become successful at gardening, you better well understand how nature works, because when you understand it, you can start working with nature rather than against it, and it gives you so much benefits. Like, your garden is super low in maintenance, your crops are way healthier, you don't have to water as much, it becomes like the weeds disappear. Like, there's so much benefits when you start to work with nature. And that's actually, I love your introduction, like, we have to focus on sustainability, and it's needed more than ever. And now with the tariffs, it's going to get on the back burner. But I don't believe that, because it will become inevitable if we don't make the shift to sustainable or beyond sustainable, which is regenerative, restoring the health of the planet. If we don't make that shift, it will become impossible to grow crops or to be a gardener or to do anything that has to relate any relationship with the outdoors. Food production, gardening, like, if we don't start working with nature, nature will actually destroy our work, because we have the wildfires, we have droughts, we have all this stuff. So yeah, that's in a nutshell how I came to become a landscape architect, with a bit of an edge in how we can help people to be more successful in getting a beautiful garden.
Okay, and I want my listeners to just verify that our guests always just give us something positive to hang on to and hold on to. But I also wish that we were on video right now, because you just become alive when you start talking about this. So that's great.
Yes.
Okay, so we've already covered the fact you trained to be a landscape architect. You talked about the role of developers in your profile, and I don't think I'd included developers in my thoughts around sustainability, but it actually makes a lot of sense. Can you explain their role?
Yes, that's a really good question. Nobody ever asked me that. So the way I look at it is like the laws of nature apply to anything. They're universal, so they apply to farming, they apply to gardening, and they also apply to development. So you might ask, like, okay, development, it's just housing. So I think housing, maybe a little bit less, but even there in architecture, there's techniques that we can build houses that are more like living, they're breathing. So the air conditioning is more natural, like even that we can really adapt. But what I'm more focusing on as well is that when we build new developments, when we build new communities, or even when we renovate properties, when we are able to create the leftover spaces, which are the gardens, when we can create something that is good for the environment, it also becomes so much beneficial for the end users, the end consumers, the people that are going to live in those houses. Because there's been done quite a bit of research, and I studied that quite a bit, is that they were looking at, for example, there was a study done in the US that showed that there is two identical communities, and they are same plot sizes, same type of buildings, like everything is the same, except, and they have same access to schools, same access to like everything that is around it. But one community focused on creating a really beautiful and biodiverse environment with trees, with shrubs, with like really something unique. And the other one was just like, okay, well, we're going to have lawn and maybe a couple of trees. And what they saw over the years is that the properties on the side with beautiful flowers, biodiversity, everybody's doing their own gardening, they were worth double the price of the ones that are like not so nice in a green environment. So I often people come to me and they argue like, oh, but you have to maintain all that stuff. And yeah, okay, there's some maintenance to be done. But if your house starts to become worth double, then if you don't do it, then we're getting like a big change. And then another research was shown that okay, we have climate change. We need to be able to sustain ecosystems around the world, because those ecosystems are the things that make sure that we can live and breathe on this planet. That creates clean water, that creates clean air. This is something, a concept called ecosystem services. Like, it's all the things that enable us to live on this planet. And what they were doing in their research was they were saying, okay, what are now the most biodiverse places on the planet so we can make more of that? So they researched everything, native forests, other spaces. And what they came in the end of the study was that those national parks, which are like protected and they're well-functioning ecosystems that have been working for a long, long time, these are very important. But now the crazy thing is that equally important are what they found is the suburbs of cities. In the suburbs of cities, people have their own garden, they have different flowers, everybody's growing different stuff. And these two environments are equally important. So it also means that even if you have a small backyard garden, you can have a huge impact on the environment and create something that is good for, or something that will benefit many generations. And I also like to think of it like, there's something that is called the butterfly effect, which says that the wimp of a butterfly can create a tornado. Or I think it's something like, maybe even, I'm not sure, a wimp of a butterfly in Canada can create a tornado in the US, something like that. I might be mistaken here. So that also shows that if you start out gardening and you do something different, your neighbor is going to start and look over the fence like, oh, what are you doing? You'll have friends come over and see like, oh, it's so much more beautiful. And yet you're not like a slave to your garden. How do you do it? So when you do it the right way, and I'm teaching that to people online in a masterclass, and it's a masterclass that works all across the world because I'm using AI, a bit of AI in it. So yeah, I think that just shows that developments, real estate developments, have a huge opportunity, maybe even a responsibility, to create spaces that are good and lasting for many generations to come. Because even if you were a developer, what would you want to leave behind? When I talk to developers, okay, we need profit, we need to make sure that we make something beautiful, architectural, it has to be right, but what do you want to leave behind? That's like the kind of question you have to ask yourself.
People are going to put you on autoplay just to keep that positive outlook. I heard a comment. Oh, actually, you know what I was going to say is you don't want to know that there are municipalities in Canada where you need lawn at the front of your house on the street. You're not allowed to plant like a vegetable garden or things like that. And it's just like, are you serious? Like, it's just crazy.
Well, can I give you a few of the facts around lawns? How devastating they are actually. Like the history of lawns is that where it originated from is in the 1800s, when big landlords that have big properties, and back then there was not much machinery, there was not like a lot of techniques to maintain lawns. So lawns were like a status symbol. So when you had a big property, a big house, and then it's all like grass, beautiful trimmed grass around it, that became a status symbol, and that kind of sticked with us throughout history, and maybe still today it's something, even though now we're pretty much controlling nature anyways, or we can control nature if we want to, that it's no longer valid. But now these days what we're using is that the whole, unfortunately, the landscaping industry, mostly the maintenance companies and the providers of the seeds and all the chemicals that come with it, they only use one type of grass, and they use the type of grass that needs the most care and that gets the most diseases, so that they can continuously come back and you'll have and even the maintenance people, they don't even know it because the knowledge is not there. It's not even their mistake, or it's not even the industry's mistake. It's just like how things have been done for such a long time. So, but the way it works is that you get a beautiful lawn. It'll look beautiful, but then all of a sudden there's weeds that start to grow in it. There's other ugly things because you're only taking one type of grass. Like, you can make beautiful mixes, but because it's only one, you need to like add more chemicals. You have to add synthetic fertilizer. You have to work on it. You have to mow it a lot. And it's mostly a reoccurring business for maintenance companies. So it's really not sustainable. And there's so many great alternatives that are super easy to maintain, that you don't have to cut that much, and the roots go also way deeper, because that one variety, the roots don't go deep. So whenever it gets a little bit dry, you see it probably in Canada now as well these days in summer, the grass is red orange. That's not what a lawn should be. And then you have to water it. It's like, it's really unsustainable. But like I said, there's so many amazing solutions. We just have to make the shift. And yeah, that's what I'm also teaching people, how to do that.
Interesting you talk about the lawn in that way, because I owned a house a number of years ago that was surrounded like big evergreen trees and things like that. And I inherited a lawn at the front, and I would get people like with businesses coming and saying, oh, you know, we can fix up your lawn. We can get rid of the moss that's in your lawn. And I'm going like, yeah, like that's never going to happen. Like the moss really likes it. And, yeah, you know,
you're not supposed to grow lawn.
And then I don't waste water on lawns. So it would turn yellow, and then they'd have a bird about that. And I go like, it's a renewable resource. Like as soon as the rains start, it's going to turn green again. So like, whatever. But yeah, I had a few businesses that got a little tired of me because I had such a huge expanse at the front of my house. Now, I heard a comment you made on another podcast that I really liked. It doesn't really matter if we humans would basically ruin the whole world. The planet is going to survive, and it's going to restore itself with or without us. I grew up on a small Air Force station that no longer exists. When the government closed it down, they removed all the buildings and walked away. I returned with my children just a few years later, like maybe five at the most, and was really surprised. I'd say things to my kids like, oh, see that grove of trees? That's where my home was. See that wild field over there? There were six or seven apartment blocks when I lived here. It was really crazy, but it really did hit home that given half a chance, nature's going to restore itself.
Oh, yeah, I fully agree. It's quite wild that how fast it can happen. And then also where that term originates from is that if we look at like the research, the knowledge that we have, and I don't want to be like a party pooper here, but the way we've been treating our planet is like we're heading towards one of the biggest, like one of the, I don't know many how many mass extinctions have happened, but we had the dinosaurs and then the planet became not inhabitable for a while, but then it just completely reinvented itself. So even if we destroy it now with the way we're doing it, and I'm not pessimistic because I'm really sure we can still make it beautiful. We're running a bit out of time, but there's still, if we make the shift, we can have way better results than all the models are predicting. Just to give you like an example, if we change farming, because I grew up on a farm, if we change from farming from the industrial chemical model, which is also very unhealthy for our personal health, to a regenerative system, if half the farmers would adapt that model, which is, by the way, also more profitable, not on the short term, but at least after 3 to 5 years, it's more profitable for the farmers. But if all farmers, or if half of the farmers would get into that system, within 7 years, we could go back to pre-industrial revolution times of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So pretty much in 7 years, we can solve climate change with farming. And we'll have better food, healthier food, more affordable food. So it's not as hard as we think it is. But if we just decide to continue as we're going, then we're getting into the next big mass extinction. And then even if that happens, the planet will, yeah, it will become inhabitable. But then it's going to rebalance and there will be a new, yeah, there will be a new world after that. But it's not going to be like, we don't want to give that to our grandchildren. We don't know how long it would still take, right?
Yeah.
And I love this quote that we are actually, instead of saying like we're passing on the land to our next, like we're inheriting the land or the planet from our parents, or that's like actually incorrect. We're inheriting it. We're borrowing it. Sorry, from the next generation.
Exactly.
And that's what it is. We have to give it back in a better state than we found it, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't want to get into politics, but we have a province here in Canada where they are sort of the oil and gas hub of the country. And yet whenever I hear about innovations, environmental sustainability innovations, a lot of them are coming out of the same province. And I'm going like, why not sink all that money that you're putting into oil and gas and drilling and all that stuff into some of these sustainability and the innovations and encourage that area instead of just drilling some more?
Yes, I agree. And I agree, but also there's a nuance that we have to make. And I think that in the current paradigm that we're living in, like, okay, we have climate change. This is the problem. It has to do with fossil fuels. So let's just use less fossil fuels. That's like the current paradigm, which it's going to have an effect. But given the damage that's already been done, that's not going to be enough. I even believe that we don't necessarily have to, we can phase out the use of fossil fuels. We don't have to like change it from one day to the other, because then we'll have more hunger, wars, all of that stuff. We can transition. And as we're transitioning, we focus on the systems that can capture those carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So given that we've already had a big industrial revolution for somewhat 200 years, maybe a little less, but at least it started then, that's 200 years at like, and we're still adding to it. But when we at the same time reverse it by focusing on regenerative systems, we can, yeah, we can still, I think we can still keep burning fossil fuels for another 10, 20 years, and at the same time focus on the actual solution, which is bringing that, storing that into the soil. Yes, that sounds a bit contradictory, but I hope you understand what I mean.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy to me that too many politicians can be so single-minded. So anyways, as I said, I didn't want to get into politics, but it's one of my soapboxes right now.
Yes.
Now, we've talked a little bit about the farms and then also individually. Now, farms are primarily based on providing food in one way or another. In terms of what we can do, or maybe I should put it as a question, do we have more ability as small individual homeowners with small plots of land to have more, and I'm not going to think of the word, more variety in terms of what we plant and how we take care of it? Is that enough to start turning this around?
Yes.
If we leave the farms out of it?
Yes, it is, because like I said, that the most biodiverse areas in the world are either the suburbs or the natural environments, the national parks of the world. So if you have a backyard, even, it doesn't matter how small it is, if you start doing it differently without the chemicals and use regenerative systems that are proven to work, like you need to study a bit more and you have to understand how nature works. You have to use the right tools, because there's so many garden tools out there. If you go to a garden center, it's full of like 90% of the tools you don't need, maybe even 95%. It's mostly driven for profit, which there's nothing wrong with that. But it's not helping homeowners to become successful at gardening, because even that whole system is like, okay, the whole garden center industry is made to keep you failing. The garden center industry doesn't want you to be successful at gardening, even though they might claim it. And maybe they don't even realize it themselves, because if you would be successful at it, you don't have to come back every spring. And you'd figure it out yourself. So that's what I'm focusing on in my program. But yeah, so if you have a small backyard and you think like, oh, the world is a mess at the moment, the biggest and most important thing you can do, and I really believe that, is to start where you are today. Start with changing the way you treat your garden. Start making a shift on the plants you use and how you use it. Start growing some of your own food. It doesn't have to be like huge quantities. Or grow some of your own herbs, so you don't have to necessarily buy it from the supermarket. That's going to have an impact on your wallet as well. And then, like I said, you become so good at it that people are going to look at you like, and they'll notice, like, oh, this is like a different type of garden. There's something else here than most gardens. And they'll be interested, because everybody has this... I believe that everybody deep inside, we all have that longing to make a connection with nature. And we also are we're human beings, we like culture. And the best way to connect both with culture and nature is gardening. So I really believe that that has a big impact. And you'll show up differently, like there's so much research that you'll feel so much, like I heard it was actually the grandmother of my cousin, so it wasn't my own grandmother, who told that if you have problems in your life or you're worried or you you're struggling with things. And I think even boomers have a share of that. I'm making that assumption. Then go work in your garden, she said, like, and you'll find your answers. You put your hands in the soil, you do some stuff, and all of a sudden you get new ideas or new ways to solve other problems. And that's even scientifically proven, that if you put your hands in the soil, there's microorganisms in a healthy soil, so no chemicals. When it's rich in microorganisms, you put your hands in the soil, our skin can absorb that. Or even if you're holding gloves, it's in the air, it's everywhere, you're inhaling it. And that improves your gut health. And now the science is coming up with is that most of the modern diseases are linked to our gut health. So when you work in your garden, you're doing it the right way, your gut health is going to improve. You won't get cancer as well, like you... I'm not going to say you're not getting cancer, because there's other influences to it, but your chances of getting cancer will go down. You'll live way longer. Like there's also this research around the blue oceans, the blue zones. So those are areas in the world where people live well over 100 years, or there's like the highest percentage of people that are over 100 years old. And they investigated like how do they do that? And there's a few aspects, community, like exercise, but one of the biggest one, which connects most of it, is to garden, is to spend time in your garden. You're doing an exercise, you're providing food, you can share it with your neighbors, you're doing community activities. So I think we can have a massive impact by every square meter of garden that gets created.
Well, and I think, too, for all those people who are going, oh, yeah, that's easy for you to say, but I'm in an apartment or I'm in a condominium. I've seen some amazing vertical gardens as well.
Oh, yeah.
And for all the grandparents out there, I started doing some little tubs with my grandson when he was a bit older than when you started, but he was maybe 6 or 7. And we'd plant the easy things like peas and things like that. And I could see him just sitting beside the tubs. I don't think I got many. He'd just sit there eating. We sometimes take care of my friend's garden when she's away in the summer, and he just wanders in and he's eating this and eating that. And what a great way also, you know, we complain about our kids being too fussy. If you create it, you're going to eat it. You're going to love it. So. Now, you also showed me your T-shirt before we got started today. It says tree hugger, and over here on the west coast of Canada, it often means, you know, you're against a logger. But there's also a lot of people now getting into actually going into the forest, and either it's forest bathing or hugging a tree, just to get that feeling into your body. And yeah, the benefits are huge.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. And I really like what you said there. Like, actually, it's a client who just gifted me that T-shirt because she knows what I'm doing. And what you also said about with your grandchildren and what you did, it's also what one of my other clients, it's a couple from Missouri in the US, Nancy and Rick, and they're amazing. And they're following my course, and now they're using all the knowledge that they are using, and they're teaching it to their grandson, and they also have a business with vegetable towers.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like a hydroponic system. So they're doing all those activities with their grandson specifically. So yeah, I see there's so many ways that you can inspire the next generation. So also they get off their phones. That's a big problem these days with the younger generation, I think. So yeah, I think gardening, farming, all the things that have to do with outdoors, forest bathing, I even believe that it can eradicate most, if not all, of the world problems that we're facing, like, seriously.
Well, I'll just add with my grandson, too. He's 15 now. Still likes spending time with his grandma. I can't figure that one out, but that's okay. The one tub that we still have, because I've been moving around a little bit, is a strawberry plant that we planted a number of years ago. And every time he comes to visit, he stops to talk to the strawberry plant. Wow. You know, so yeah, it's amazing the effect it can have on kids. And as you say, if it keeps them off their phones and teaches them, because they're coming up, if they can just learn that planting a garden is what you do, then, you know, there's a lot more hope for the future.
Yeah, I love that. And this actually reminds me about another research that had been done. And I think if I would have told this 5 years ago, most people would think I'm crazy. But now it feels like that there's more space to say that, because it's scientifically proven. That some people knew that already, but it wasn't like the science wasn't backing it up yet. So they did like a research where they put two plants, exactly the same varieties, same. So they had the same pot, same amount of water. They put it in like a laboratory environment, so it was neutral. Like there's no external influences that could affect one or the other. And on one plant, they would put like hate words on it, like ugly and not nice. And the other one, they would give like praise and love and all these high energy vibrations. And then every day they would also come to the plant. One day would be like, oh, how are you doing? Like really high energy. The other one, they would, just for the sake of the test, give like bad comments and all that stuff. And they've done it several times over and over and over and over again, because they couldn't believe it, is that the plants that you cheer on and you're happy about, they grow like double. They're just growing way better. So there's something there that we're just only grasping the... Yeah, we're just at the beginning of understanding what plants can do and how they interact with us.
One of the online people that I used to follow, not so much anymore, he would actually say, beware of the energy you bring to this space. So, you know, that really does make a difference. Like if you're just going to, and obviously to plants as well. And yeah, I believe it. That's okay. Now, when I first messaged you, I commented on how so many women I know would love to have a big communal home, living together, albeit semi-independently, and becoming as self-sufficient as possible. So in that sort of environment, you talked even as a child of like dividing things up. What would, with your expertise, what would that look like? Like a whole variety of things, including flour? Like, I don't know, you tell me.
Oh, I love this question. So I'm actually in the, I think I can talk about this. Yes, you would be fine with it. I'm in the process of talking with someone in Canada, actually, in the Toronto bigger area, where we're looking to set up homes for the boomer generation. Like, she doesn't want to hear the word retirement homes because that's like that. And it's pretty inspirational as well as a story. I interviewed her on my podcast. You can check it out. So she had always been a nurse her whole life. She was taking care of elder people that were getting into the end of their life. She did that her whole career. And then she came to the retirement age herself. And what she did as a gift to herself, to getting into retirement, which she never did, is she said, okay, now I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to start my business and help other people to be better at nursing. So, and she opened within 5 years, she opened, no, within 3 years, she opened two clinics. She has so many clients now in Toronto, and she's literally booming in her businesses and her own life. And we're looking to work together to create these homes, which is a mix of a community. So what we actually want to create is also based on that Blue Zones principle. It's like, okay, how do people live longer, and not only live longer, but live better longer? Like, I wish that everybody could experience what my grandfather was. He was 6 months before he passed away. He was still working in the garden, and he became 96. He worked his whole life as a farmer, so that you stay healthy just at the end. So how can we create those communities? So we're doing a lot of research on that, and some of the things I can already talk about is that we want to mix generational things. For example, we're looking at, can we place in the middle of these communities, can we place a daycare center for children or after school care, so that, because elder people also love to be around young people, and maybe their grandchildren are not living close by, they're moved to other places in the world. These days, everybody is around. So when we create that in the middle of it, of that community, it can become a place where the elder people interact with the younger people, and they can learn from each other. Like, they can help each other. The younger can learn from the wisdom of the elders, and we recreate that Blue Zones community. And then obviously a big part of it will be to create gardens, and even have younger people to help the elder in the garden and in the maintenance of the garden. And pretty much what I want to create is that, like you said, there'll be different options for people, because some people like to be really in a community most of the time. Others like to still have their privacy or their garden, their private garden. So we're going to make a bunch of mixes, even have some apartments, so it also becomes more affordable. But everything is also around, like, there's all the care that is necessary. And then we design that in a way by looking at the, first of all, we'll look at the current state of the land. And what is the maintenance cost? A lot of these, we're actually now looking both on starting a completely new one, and also at renovating an existing one. Is like, oftentimes the maintenance of the greenery is a high cost. So how can we reduce that but enhance the biodiversity? Because that's, sometimes people think it's impossible, but it's actually what is needed. So yeah, we're getting really creative in real estate development to support the baby boomers, that they can live a beautiful, and what my friend calls a grace, that you can become old gracefully.
I'm going to grow old disgracefully, trust me.
Yeah.
In England, I had looked over here at my bookshelf. There, I had a book, I probably still have it somewhere, called The Hen Co-op. And in Britain, they had started to do something like that, and they got the municipality involved. They did this huge development. Now, most of it, I know it's a living arrangement, but also I don't know just how else what else is involved with that. But yeah, there's a few examples and a few areas where they are doing that. So yeah, that's great. Maybe, no, I was going to say maybe I'd move to Toronto, but no.
Really, no.
I'm on the West Coast in Victoria,
Oh,
so it's
sorry.
much
Awesome.
milder here. It's
Yeah, I was actually in Vancouver last year. I published my award-winning, well, I didn't publish it, my publisher did, but I launched it on a cruise ship from Vancouver to Alaska. Like my publisher organizes a business retreat every year for all the publishers, for all the authors. So I was in Vancouver. I loved it. It's such a beautiful place, and the nature in Canada is just, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, we think so.
Yeah.
When I started my notes for our chat today, I must admit I was thinking of sustainability as food. But we also need, you know, the bees and the birds, shade trees, a variety of other things. What all is included in a really healthy ecosystem?
That's another really good question. So there's a quote, I think it's from Einstein. Look deep into nature and you will understand everything better. So that's what I apply when I'm teaching people how to design their own garden, or when we're looking at developments, we look at like, okay, what is the specific climate we are in and what commonly grows there, and can we recreate that, or can we do it in the same fashion but have plants that have way better properties? So we will imitate nature, but still we will add the features that we like. If you like a hibiscus plant, or you like another flowering plant, or you like roses, we're going to include all of that, but we'll still do it in a way that it is based on how nature works. And then when you create that, you're creating way more biodiversity. And then there's other ways to like, I always say you should, rather than like many people think, okay, I don't want bugs in my garden so that my garden plants are not eaten by my bugs. Well, that's a short-term and not so good solution. The best one is to, and it's kind of contradictory, if you want to get rid of all the bugs that are bothering your plants, you should invite more bugs and more biodiversity. Because once you can create a super high biodiverse garden, you also start attracting beneficial insects. I always say you have to add water in your garden. If you can dig a pond, or if you're in a small backyard, put some water feature, even if it's really small, because now you can attract dragonflies, and dragonflies, they eat other insects that might eat your plant. They are like predators, so and you can only have dragonflies if you have a water pond, so enhancing the biodiversity. The ladybugs, for example, they eat aphids. They eat, like, they can eat up to 100 aphids a day, and aphids, when you're a gardener and like roses, you know that aphids can really be a problem. So when you create an environment that ladybugs love, and what do ladybugs need? They need woody material and leaves and all that things to get through the winter. So whenever winter starts, they will go in nature, they will go into the forest, get it under the leaves, so they're isolated from the cold. Now, when we have a garden, what we do in just before winter, we clean everything up. We rake all the leaves. We put them away. We get them to a disposal company, and then your garden is super clean. It might look somewhat nice. Arguably, it can look nice, but then your ladybugs cannot survive the winter. And then next spring things start, and then your roses are attacked by aphids because you don't have the ladybugs that are helping you. So keeping your biodiversity high, and there's so many techniques to also do it in a beautiful and in a designed way. So that, what I'm discouraging people to do is to create a mess. Like, when you don't maintain your garden and you don't create a design, okay, then you just have a piece of nature, and it's also fine, but it's not going to be very ugly. It still look messy. So there is systems to both make it beautiful and also super high in biodiversity, because once you have the biodiversity wheels that starts to turn, you'll see that you'll have to weed less, your plants are healthier, your crops look better, you don't have to maintain as much plants, and it becomes easier, easier, easier year after year. And we've seen that in many gardens. Just like an example, last year we finished one of our own one-on-one clients where we do everything for them. We implemented all of the latest techniques that I had been gathering over the last 10 years, because my client said, like, going to give you carte blanche, you do whatever you want, I just want a beautiful and super low maintenance garden. And I challenged the odds. I was like, okay, let's put everything in that is needed. and I could explain it in great depth, but we don't have time because you need to study it, need some more time to understand it. But the end result was that we created a 3,000 square meter garden. So that's not a huge garden, but it's also not a small garden. And after we completed the new planting and the garden was ready for the season, over the next 9 months, there was only 12 hours of maintenance. 12 hours of, I have to stop that for a minute. Nobody believes that when I say that. But 12 hours of maintenance in 9 months for a 3,000 square meter garden. And we had flowers, edible plants, herbs. Like, it's not that it was a boring garden or anything. It was still super high in the biodiversity. But when, and because we focused on creating it super high in biodiversity. So, yeah, I think it's really, I get so excited about it, knowing that when we follow nature and we apply the knowledge that Mother Nature has given us, then just everything becomes so much easier.
Yeah. I think, too, we've got to change our attitude. Like you mentioned aphids, and, you know, people would look at something, you know, make all these faces and dreadful noises. 40 years ago, when my auntie was coaching me in a bit of gardening, the Brussels sprouts, for example, you know, you'd peel off the few outer leaves that are kind of ugly and you'd see the aphids. And she'd sort of go like, oh, well, whatever, put them in a bowl with some salt water. The aphids will die and then you just wash them out and you're fine. You know, so just to get past that whole idea of, you know, oh, it's a bug, you know, yeah. You got to throw it all out.
No, that's exactly that. And that's what we also do. Just another example, when we start new gardens, I highly encourage people to put up a lot of birdhouses. Like, we think, oh, it's kind of nice to have a birdhouse in your garden. We put like a lot. We put for a smaller garden, we would put like 10. So you're attracting all these birds and they also eat all the insects that you don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. Sounds amazing.
I know in some of the really natural parks around here, so where nature's just reclaimed an area, it's not unusual to find the bat houses as well. And they're also really good munchers and crunchers, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Huh. Invasive species. I was taking a property for a couple of years, and I was really diligent about some of the ones that were just going crazy. You know, they're from who knows how they got here, doesn't matter. And then last summer, I was still at that house, and I realized that because, like, one of them, for example, that just spread like wildfire, the neighbors were actually cultivating it because it had all these bright colors. What's your take on invasive species?
Very good question, and that needs to be answered with a bit of nuance, because there's a really cool book that is called How Invasive Species Are Gonna Save Our World or Save Our Planet. And it goes like, we are quite afraid of invasive species, but I also believe that every plant that does well in a certain environment, it's there for a certain reason. Like, just like weeds in your garden, when you have a certain plant that starts to take over, maybe there's something wrong with your soil. Maybe there has been a lot of chemical, maybe it was an old factory and there's chemicals in the ground. And that's the only plant that can survive those conditions. And it's actually restoring and breaking down those chemicals. Like in Belgium, we have a plant called Japanese knotwood, and it's very invasive. But what they now figured out is that also in Belgium, it's a small country. It had a lot of big industries. Again, over the last 100 years, 200 years, there's been a lot of pollution in a lot of the areas related to industries. And that plant does really well in those environments. And now they start to see in the research that these plants are actually restoring the health of the soil. So we have these, what we call forever chemicals in the soil. So these are chemicals that are naturally, they would take thousands of years to break down and so that it becomes healthy. And now these invasive species are able to break it down way faster within a couple of years. So I think for certain areas we can use invasive species, but we also have to be careful in other areas, like if you don't have to introduce it or there is not necessarily a big problem with the soil, then we should not, yeah, we have, like, it has to be looked at plant by plant, and we have to follow the research around it. There's another plant, for example, Paulownia, which is also the name of my company, and it's a tree from Asia, and it's considered the climate tree because it grows so fast and it grows so vigorous, and it's not indigenous in Europe. Some people say that it's invasive, but it has this characteristic that it can produce a lot of oxygen because it grows so fast, and it can also create a lot of biomass. So even in the like we're looking at it to use it in timber industry, because it grows in 7 years, there's a tree that you can harvest. And the crazy part about that tree is as well, and that's why it's starting to be considered as like the future tree or the tree of the future, is that when you cut it down after 7 years for timber, it regrows, and 5 years later you have the same tree. So it's, even if you would, yeah, that's like the best solution for sustainable wood logging. I don't think it grows in Canada, it's too cold, I think. But yeah, there's all these solutions about invasive species, but there's a big but. We have to like look at every specific plant before we introduce it in certain areas.
Right. So on the West Coast here, we can keep on getting rid of the Scotch broom because it just takes over. But I'm so glad you brought up it's a Paulownia. Is that how you pronounce it? Okay.
Yeah.
I looked it up because it is the name of your landscape architect company. And it occurred to me because what I read, and I've got my notes right here, is the colonization, et cetera, on sterile soils, such as after a high temperature wildfire. Oh my goodness, the entire west coast of North America is having just really dreadful wildfires these days. And then the wood is not susceptible to rot. It's used for boat building and surfboards. You'd like that. And then the fact that the timber is extremely easy to work with and is reported to be resistant to decay with good weathering characteristics. So once again, in terms of whether it's house building, as you say, just the fact that the turnover is huge. And yet, yes, it did say in this article I was reading that it is considered to be an invasive species some places.
Yes.
So that's unfortunate that it won't grow in Canada, perhaps.
No, but there's other trees that can do well in Canada that have better properties than what's commonly used. But yeah, that's maybe food for another podcast. But yeah, the Paulownia has a lot of potential. Yep.
Okay. That's why I was smiling so big when you mentioned it, because I went, oh, I looked that up. I have some information. Where was I going to go after this? I've sort of bounced around today, and I sort of apologize, but I wanted to ask some certain questions. At this stage of the interview, I usually ask my guests, what haven't we talked about that mid-eight life folk should think about? And I want you to answer that, but I also want to ask you again, what can we do? Where do we start to pressure our communities on a larger scale, whether it's municipalities or counties, whatever, to plan in a more sustainable way?
So I think I'll respond the first question first, then we can get to the second question. So I think what you can do as a boomer is to, and that might also may give you an answer of the second question. So the first question is that, okay, how can we make a difference? What can we do to make things happen? I believe that you lead by example. You start in your own backyard. You start with something tangible that you can do in your own. And I'm not saying you should stop advocating for change and you should stop going to community events and all that stuff. That's very valuable as well. But I think, as a human race, the way we can change, it's like if we put pressure on people, like now you have to do sustainable gardening, like you have to now start following these rules. That doesn't seem to be working very well. Like there's, when you force people to do certain things, they're like, they'll do it, but it's not going to be sustainable or long term. They'll just do it just because they have to. And they're not going to be eager to learn and to observe. So I really encourage you to start on your own, but get support. Like you could figure everything out on your own by going on YouTube, but then you get also very overwhelmed because there's so much stuff out there around gardening. So follow someone that you trust, that you know has good expertise, that has proven records with past clients, so you can learn from that person and you can win a lot of time. And that's why I created my masterclass. Like, it's in 9 weeks you can learn things that took me 10 years, maybe even my whole life to really get and to understand. So that's what I would encourage. And then, yeah, at the same time, it's still good to get into policies. Also, if people are still, like, there's many, I really appreciate boomers because you have a wealth of knowledge around business, around, like, you're the generation that pretty much created our modern day and life with all the goodies that we have. Okay, we could be skeptical about, okay, we have climate change, but I don't believe that, because whatever your generation has done enabled us, this generation, to live in a way better way. Like, if we look at history, my grandparents, they were still going through the Second World War. That was, like, they lived through that, so that was not a really good time. Then they gifted my parents to the boomers to be better off, and then my parents gifted us to have a way better world. Like, we can be skeptical about what's going on in the world and the wars and all this stuff, but if you look at it from an objective way, the world we have today is still far better off than 100 years ago, than 200 years ago. Like, it's pretty awesome the way we live today. So I think in that sense that I would encourage boomers to also connect with younger people that are just starting out with their business, that maybe they want to start a joint venture. And I think it's encouraging for the boomers as well to not necessarily start to lean back, because what do? You sit on your couch and you watch TV. Okay, if you want to do that, do it. I don't have anything against it. But if you feel like you still have things to give to the world, and you feel like you have all, you pretty much have a life of experience that you can bring to the next generation, then do something with it. Like, start coaching people even for free, or help other people with gardening if you're already an expert in that. Like, use the gifts that you have to give that to the next generation, so we can move faster into a new world that is going to be good for many, many generations to come.
Well, the other part of getting older is everybody that's an authority tells us that we should learn a new language to keep our brain healthy, something like that. I have a better suggestion. Tell us about your masterclass. Maybe we should take your masterclass and keep on learning that way. So tell us about your masterclass.
Yes, so thank you for asking. So it's a program that I created from, I already had that idea for some time and I was brewing on it, but the Kickstarter of it was a client of mine where we had redesigned a big portion of their property, like almost half of it, and she loved what we did. We finished it. It was like beautiful. She said, like, I really love what you did. It's amazing. But you know what? I'm done now with landscape architects. I don't need a landscape architect anymore. I want to experience it myself, what it is like to design a garden, to create a space, to learn how to plant, to put the plants into the soil. And I was like, wait a second, this is getting interesting. First, I was a little bit shocked, like, oh, she's saying that she doesn't need a landscape architect anymore. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to teach you everything that I know and everything that I gained in knowledge over the past years, from growing up on a farm as a child to getting to learn permaculture, to learn all these things, traveling the world, starting my own business, applying all the successes in my clients, so that you can do it for yourself. And that was the birth of the 9-week masterclass, the Garden of Your Dreams masterclass. And it's only 9 weeks. And within those 9 weeks, you learn how to design your own garden, you learn how to create it, and you learn how to maintain it. Because that third step, a lot of people are not talking about that in the garden industry. They, even colleagues of mine in landscape design, they might tell you how you can create it, but not so much of, like, okay, now when it's done, how will I maintain it? And if you don't know how to do it, then you'll have companies that come and help you with that, and it's okay. There's definite value to that, but there's also ways you can drastically reduce your maintenance with proven techniques. And I'm teaching that. So that's what we do in 9 weeks. We actually start in the first, I explain you how nature works. We started with that, Agnes, in the beginning of the podcast. That was what I learned as a child, or later on, I everything clicked later. So I teach you that. How does nature work? That's like the basis. And then I also teach you how to analyze your garden or your existing situation. And then we go on and there's a few more teachings. And then we, in around week four, I teach you how to use AI. Because now we've gathered all that information and we're going to put it in a system that I have developed. And then what that system does, it gives you an exact list of plants that will grow 100% sure in your specific garden. And then we go on and we create a planting plan. We help you like everything. And then by week six, you have a fixed plan and you can start implementing it. And then after the masterclass, you'll know how to do it. Then and it's, yeah, I'm very excited about how it works. I had never thought that it could be so successful. And I'm not saying that from my own experience. It's from the people that follow the course, because some people now are starting to teach it to other people. So I had my client Aunt Sophie, she joined the course, and after I told like, okay, I'm just going to teach people how to do it for themselves, right? In after week six, she's showing me a design for one of her son's garden, and I look at it and I'm like analyzing it, looking to get feedback or to improve it, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh wow, I can't find a way that I personally would do it better. And that was like, okay, I'm actually onto something here. I think there's a garden designer in every one of us. And then she went on and she must have had like friends come over or family come over to her house. And she showed the plans of what she was doing and how it's now starting to look. And those friends were like, oh, that's amazing. Can you do that for me? And she was like, she has like another business. And she's like, okay, I'll do it. And now she has like her own clients, which that was never my intention, but I'm so excited that, because that's what I want to do. I'm creating a ripple effect. I need an army of gardeners, and I need people like you that are eager to learn it, so then you can spread it to other people, or you can make a business of it. Like, I'm also coaching young people or younger people, it doesn't matter what age, to start their own business in garden design, because I also know that for effect with the AI revolution, many jobs will get lost or get many jobs will disappear, and that's okay, because there's so many jobs that are boring that AI will do it for us. So then it's going to be like, what are we going to do? Well, gardening, it's not going to be that easy for AI to do gardening and to teach all that knowledge, even though I'm using it in my class to be more effective, because without the AI in my course, my program would, if I were to teach you, Agnes, about how to design, create, and maintain your own garden before the AI revolution, you'd probably have to follow a two-year course with me, and I would have to study a lot about the plants in Canada. But now with the help of AI, we can do it in 9 weeks. So yeah, that's in a nutshell. And then we also have like, we have a weekly group meeting with the whole community. You can ask me any questions. There's a WhatsApp group for other questions. Like, there's several moments of accountability, so you stay on track, and we do whatever we can to make you succeed as a gardener. And end of the day, it's still like, in all honesty, it's still your own decision, right? I can only help you and support you and teach you, but you have to do the work. But I'm helping you to do that as effective as possible.
Well, and I think it's a genius idea, because for you, the trained landscape architect, there will always be more work for you. So to train, we're sort of like your ground troops, I guess, to train a whole bunch of other people. And the other thing I wanted to say is I looked up at your masterclass, and for anybody from probably middle Europe to the west coast of North America here, the time that you do your live chat or whatever it is that you do, it was like 9 a.m. Pacific here. So that is completely doable.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then we've got something
following in Australia. He's getting up also early, or not at the moment, but he was still dedicated to make it in our time zone. And I'm also flexible about like making it work wherever you are in the world. And I love what you said, because that was exactly what happened. Like, I started my design business, and I was like, okay, I'm getting some clients, and I started to like calculate, okay, if I keep doing this for the next, whatever, 60 years, I want to keep doing this forever, then I can get that much clients and I'll have had an impact on that much square meters. And I was like, shit, it's not actually that much. how can I start to like really have an impact? And that's where I was like starting to get really excited. If I can teach people how to do it, they can teach it to other people, and so on. So that's, yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. And, you know, if you get any project to a place where I can, you know, sustain it, then, you know, it frees you up to move on to that next project. So, you know, it's win-win all the way around. You don't have to be stuck with the same old project year after year. You get new challenges, you know, new things that you have to learn or whatever. And you just keep on going that way. You also wrote a book.
Yes, I have it here. The 12 Universal Laws of Nature, How to Get the Most Potential Out of Your Land. And it's on Amazon. And yeah, it's won an award, and I'm very excited about it because it was the first time in my life that I reflected on all the, and on the things that I talked about so far. I mean, it's in more depth, the whole story and the knowledge there. So yeah, it's been quite a challenge to write it for me, but I've done it and I'm very happy about the result, and I've been helped a lot by my publisher to get it done. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun to do it.
Oh, that sounds great. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
So when you want to get in touch with me, you can always send me an email, and we can put that email address in the show notes. So that's my full name, Mathieu, with double T-H-I-E-U, .Mehuis, that's a Dutch name, M-E-H-U-Y-S, @gmail.com, you can contact me. That's my personal email address. And so if you have any questions, you can reach out there. My team will also follow up on that, so to make sure that it doesn't get lost. And then I'm also active on most social media platforms. Okay. Like if you're using Instagram, you can find me there. I'm also active on Facebook. If you Google my name, you'll find all of the platforms, TikTok, even LinkedIn. And then I have my website of the masterclass. You can also go to, there's a free 30-minute training. It's kind of like a taster. It's like when you go to the grocery store, you can have some samples. So I've put together a 30-minute training that will actually give you some plans and lists and things that you can apply immediately. And that's www.gardenofyourdreams.com. /free training, and then you will find it there.
All right. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Yes, please.
Now, you talk about one of your first memories being at 3 years old, family farm. Many of our listeners have grandchildren that age. You talked about the radishes. What other things caught your very young imagination at that age, whether it's flowers or vegetables, whatever? Like the radish is great. I've made a note of that.
Yes. What else? Well, yeah, I pretty much started out from radishes to all the other stuff. And most of them are not so easy to grow. They require quite a lot of maintenance. And actually also in my masterclass, I've created another 4-week training related to it, which is the edible gardening workshop. So we look at also perennial plants that you can grow in your garden that are even more ornamental and have beautiful flowers, but you can also eat from them. And so you only have to plant them once, and you can keep eating from them for years. So I think that's an interesting way. But as a child, I still also remember that we had a kiwi, a plant. Like that was quite exciting as well.
That's great. Okay. So your website link will be in the show notes. And listeners, I really encourage you to check out Mathieu's website. The photos, because this is what I've got is Paulownia-LA. I'll put all the links there.
You mentioned that one. That's like if you don't have time, maybe you're still running a business and you don't have, even my masterclass doesn't take that much time. But if you're like, you're completely booked out with time, then you can also contact me over that website or even with the same email address. And then we do everything for you, the same approach. You enjoy the results and not the process. So both work, but I find it, both is fine. Both are interesting.
What I loved, and I'll check out your other one as well, but where I was going in terms of our listeners is the photos are beautiful and they are such an incentive to really move forward on taking action. So that's great. But all your links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, there are days when I want to move to the country and be self-sufficient just to hide from current events. That's not realistic, probably isn't responsible either. But taking just a few of Mathieu's suggestions to heart would not only be a good start to helping the environment, but I'm willing to bet it would improve your outlook on life, increase your positivity, and set an example for your children and grandchildren. I'd love to hear your thoughts, so please talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Or, I always say this, but this time there's probably a dozen questions I didn't ask Mathieu. Ask just one in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. I have mentioned communal living several times today. If that's even remotely on your radar, you might find your peeps by sharing this episode. At any rate, you will incentivize others to shake off the negativity and create something productive. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and help us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. Mathieu Mouhouse, thank you for being my guest today and giving us such constructive, practical thoughts and action steps. Thank you.
Amazing, Agnes. I'm so happy to come on your show, and you asked so many great questions. I had a lot of fun, and we're spreading the word, so thank you for having me on.
No, that's great. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of week.